This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 289 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Good afternoon, UAV universe. hey, Max, how are you? You enjoyed your long holiday weekend?
It was very nice. And soon I'm departing again, this time for Baltimore and the FAA UAS Symposium. Looking forward to 3 days of immersion in the symposium.
Yeah, you're going to be so overloaded, you're not going to know what to do with yourself.
We'll see. We'll try to get some good contacts, maybe some interviews along the way. We'll see what happens. Definitely expect to be covering that event in a lot of detail, so we can look forward to that.
Was there anything happening in the drone world? You know, so much stuff is going on everywhere else. So I guess we better get started. We may have some stories to talk about, huh?
I think we just might, David.
Well, our first story comes from the yeshiva world. NASA's first-of-a-kind tests look to manage drones in cities. Tests in downtown Reno, autonomous drone flight. NASA's really going forward with this.
They are, David, and what we have here is some real testing, some real flights in downtown Reno, like you say. We saw one drone that flew from one rooftop, this on a five-story parking garage, to a roof across the street that wasn't visible. Interestingly, the drone needed to adjust itself for some blowing winds, which it apparently did successfully. And in another test, they had a couple of drones approaching each other, and he wanted to see if they could avoid colliding. Now, again, these are autonomous flights. They did avoid colliding. They used onboard tracking systems connected to NASA's ground computers.
The drones have an onboard software for landing and avoiding crashes, surveillance, detection, and identification. Sensors and optical cameras and LIDAR. It's pretty cool that we're sending out drones to patrol the city in the dark of the night, and they're not hitting each other.
Which is good. Now, in addition to the software on board the drones, there's also ground-based system software, and that communicates flight plans, communicates positions as well to other software systems. So this seems to be working pretty well. If there are any difficulties encountered, haven't seen them reported in the press.
No, but it's slow and steady steps. We keep seeing this a lot. So good to downtown Reno, and thank God it's not becoming a comedy television show like the other Reno stories. But we'll have to keep following up. Maybe you'll hear some more about this next week when you're immersed in UAVs in Baltimore.
Perhaps. Now, of course, conducting these tests in Reno is Nevada Institute of Autonomous Systems. And as we know from the test sites and so forth, that the results will be shared with the FAA and used to inform future regulations. So, yeah, some good progress. Like to see it.
Well, our next story comes from Isaac and our Slack listener team. Man says neighbors use drone footage in court against him. This is from wishtv.com, and it occurred in Indiana. William Morrison bought a 35-acre property in 1985. He wanted to use the land to raise emus, grow ginseng, and fix cars, all to pay his retirement. He even constructed a large privacy fence. But wait, You can always fly over. You could always fly over a fence.
That's right. The land around him ended up being developed over the years, so he had new neighbors. And they apparently didn't like much what Morrison was doing in his own property, on his own land. So the neighbors complained to the county. They accused him of violating county ordinances. But where this gets a little sticky is it appears that these neighbors used drones or flew a drone over Morrison's property, taking pictures that they used as evidence to the county. Now, Morrison says that the only way they could have gotten those shots would be to fly beyond visual line of sight. So that raises some interesting questions, David.
You mean like you're not supposed to be flying beyond visual line of sight, according to the FAA?
Right. And if you do, does that impact the legitimacy of the evidence? Or can that be excluded because it was obtained in an apparently illegal manner? That's an interesting question.
It's like a lot of things going on. Ill-gotten evidence is not supposed to be used to prosecute somebody. You know, it tarnishes the prosecution. So it's interesting that the neighbors went this far, you know, and I guess this boils down to privacy rules again, which there are laws for already. So did they violate his privacy by spying on the emus?
Don't know. Yeah, it's that issue of expectation of privacy. Did the man have a reasonable expectation of privacy? I think it's explored a little bit in this article, where they note that if you have just a low fence that someone can just lean over and look, that you don't really have much by way of an expectation of privacy. But if you construct a large barrier, a tall barrier, so that it's not really possible for someone just to look into your property, then does that change your reasonable expectation of privacy? So there's a lot of issues here. It's kind of hard to tell how this will pan out because, I mean, it's not a court case, at least not yet, I guess. It's just a complaint to the county. But this one kind of bears watching.
Yeah, because everybody's going to start flying, you know. We had very large trees around our pool growing up, and my father jokingly called it a spite fence, meaning I spite you and I don't want to look at your stuff and I don't want you looking at mine. But you would have needed a very high UAS to spy on us in our pool. So what's interesting is he didn't have the ability to shoot it down or take it out. That would have been, but we've had that discussion in the past. So yeah. We'll see what happens with this. Well, remote ID regulations for unmanned aircraft systems are delayed till September 2019. So the notice for proposed rulemaking, you know, that were those initials, NPRM, for remote identification of UAS was scheduled for July 2019. Evidently, the FAA is putting that back.
Yeah, it's the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, and they say that the NPRM now will be issued in September 2019. This comes about because of a publication on May 22nd of the Trump administration's Unified Agenda of Regulatory and Deregulatory Actions. And that is a pretty broad-reaching document. It covers a lot of different things. But within that, there is this notice that it's now planned for September. Now, I haven't really seen the logic or the reasons for the delay. So I think all we can do right here, David, is just note that for those who were looking forward to being able to provide comments on this remote identification topic, that you're going to have to wait. We're all going to have to wait until September 2019.
Patience is a virtue. But it does get our industry kind of up in a tussle because we're trying to move forward with all this stuff and we want to participate successfully. And when the government slows things down again, it gets everybody angry and upset and cranky and irritable, and we don't like that. So keep in mind, it's another one thing we've got to monitor, but I think it's going to come and we'll get our say and we'll see, you know, things are moving forward, but not like we want them to. So let's talk about the Corps of Engineers. UAS adds cutting-edge capabilities for core projects. This is from DVIDS Hub, which is the Department of Defense video hub. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Sacramento District is using micro-drones, quadcopter. The district's four-person UAS team has been trained by micro-drones, two of them, and are Part 107 certified UAS pilots, now demonstrating UAS capabilities. This is really cool for the Army Corps of Engineers because they're kind of stretched thin over the last couple of weeks with hurricanes, tornadoes, and severe flooding in the Midwest.
So they expect to use the drone for applications like video footage and photos for the Public Affairs Office, creating detailed site maps, and they also note high-resolution 3D images for both team members and also for the partner agencies. Micro-drones has been around a while, at least by UAS timelines, since 2005. And they have three models, the MD-4-1000, the MD-4-200, and the MD-4-3000. And looking at the photo of the drone that the Corps of Engineers is using, it appears that they're using the MD-4-1000 model, which has got a pretty significant flight time there, David.
It does, and it seems like a very hardy, sturdy, stable platform. It's got flight times up to 45 minutes, depending upon conditions and payload. Rain, dust, and heat resistant, strong winds, magnetic fields, and voltage humidity. And it can carry a payload of 1.2 kilograms or 2.7 pounds. So it definitely is a industrial strength UAS, be it small, but it's going to be flying in definitely in-depth environments or harsher environments than normal UASs would be, which would make sense given the environments the Army Corps of Engineers work with.
Microdrones, the company, is going to be hosting something in just a couple of weeks here called Geo Days 2019. That's going to be June 12th through 14th, 2019. And they're going to be hosting this event at their location in Germany. They're going to be doing a number of different things besides conducting some flight demonstrations. They're also going to show attendees how to integrate surveying, mapping, LIDAR, and inspection into the business environment. So we'll have a link in the show notes to that Geo Days 2019. There's a site there where you can learn more information, shows the schedule, and gives you a form where you can register for the event. So if you're going to be in Germany, close to this location, this is something that it might apply to you, you might want to take a look at that.
And you can always do that through our show notes. We're not being paranoid. U.S. warns of spy dangers of Chinese-made drones. This is from NPR.org. We talked about this previously about the U.S. Department of Homeland Security about Chinese-made drones, and we don't need to rehash it. But NPR mentions the Department of Homeland Security Cybersecurity Infrastructure and Security Agency CISA website. It contains a video describing the threat to critical infrastructure. So I guess, Max, we're going to call this our video of the week.
Yeah, I think so. It's an interesting video. It's kind of a summary. Now, when you visit this webpage where the video is, there's a lot of information. They describe the threat to critical infrastructure of UAS, why it's important to critical infrastructure, actions that you can take. It's got the video as well as some DHS UAS resources and contact information. But the video is 11 minutes, and again, it's kind of an overview, and this is all directed towards protecting the critical infrastructure. The NPR article goes into more aspects of the issue with Chinese drones that the U.S. government has been bringing out lately. But if you haven't been keeping up with the threat to the critical infrastructure, this page is kind of interesting. At the very least, the video, which is 11 minutes long, will give you an idea of where the government's coming from anyway when it comes to critical infrastructure. And they talk about things like, detection and mitigation issues. They have some cautions for counter UAS concepts. Some organizations may think in that direction, but there are some things to consider there. And then they talk about interesting things like preserving evidence so that if there is, let's say, an incursion by a drone over critical infrastructure, how do you document that? How do you preserve the evidence? Another thing they go into that's really important, I think, is to develop a response plan. So if you're an organization that's part of the critical infrastructure, you really shouldn't just wait until the first time a problem arises and then try to figure out how to respond to it. Having a plan in place, having employees who are trained in how to react to it is an important thing to do.
Absolutely. So definitely watch the video. I think, Max, we're going to be talking about Chinese drones for a while, given our current political climate and the dominance that they have, especially in the hobbyist and prosumer grades and the activities there. Let's move on. We got some feedback, Max. What did we get feedback from?
Well, we heard from Judy Lai. She's with the IQPC, that's the International Quality and Productivity Center, which is an event company for business-to-business events. And they just published a couple of things. One is they published a map that highlights the latest drone incidents around the world. And it shows some of these things that we've talked about and some people will be familiar with, and others maybe not so much, but it shows incidents in Venezuela, the UK and Ireland, France, Hong Kong, the US, Yemen, Myanmar, and Australia. And you can download this map and you can learn more about drones in prisons. Greenpeace's deliberate flying of a drone into EDF's nuclear power station in France. Some of the other events that have taken place, such as the drone that flew above an Ed Sheeran concert in Australia. The airports, of course, we've seen a number of incidents surrounding airports and a lot of others. Now, this map is part of the Countering Drones Conference, which, of course, is taking place this year, 2019, July 9th through 11th. In London. So we'll put a link in the show notes to the post where you can download this map. We'll mention that you have to provide your name and contact information to download the map. But besides the map, you'll also see some information about the conference, and you can get a copy of the conference agenda as well.
They also have an opinion piece, which we'd like you to look at. Risk, regulation, and resilience in countering drones. And the challenges surrounding the current risk management systems, the necessity for regulation to act as a deterrent, but to bring liability to different types of drone users, and the need for resilience to be built into infrastructure for prevention and to combat specific threats. So it's an interesting discussion about UAS, that counter UAS, you've got to identify the threats and be responsible when attending the threat, and then making sure that you have a sustainability to keep that up. So, like I said, this year was going to be counter UAS, because end of last year over London and Heathrow, there was some big stories, even though a lot of it hasn't come out with. We have a friend who suggested that maybe some of these drone companies invest in bird supplies or feathers so that when an actual drone does hit these aircraft, that they basically see some smarge, which is the stuff left over from a bird that's hit an aircraft. But we'll leave that more to Ken lurking out there, suggesting that to other companies. Yes, Ken, I was kind of freaked out when you suggested that to other people.
It was a joke, of course.
It was a joke.
Just to be clear.
It was a joke, but there's some truth in jest. But yes, counter UAS is important. We'd like to thank Judy for sending over all of that stuff. And you can find more about the conference on our homepage at theuavdigest.com. So I guess, like, with that, Max, we've got a bit of a short episode this week, but I think maybe we should wrap it up.
All right, David. I will mention just quickly that if you are attending the FAA UAS Symposium in Baltimore, want to get in touch, have a drink, have a conversation, whatever you like, go ahead and reach out. You can go ahead and write to us at the email address for the podcast, feedback@theuavdigest.com, or on Twitter, and feel free to do either of those. So we want to thank you for listening. It's been episode 289. Again, the website is theuavdigest.com. We have show notes at theuavdigest.com/289. There you'll find the unified agenda of regulatory and deregulatory actions. Also, some information about that MicroDrones Geo Days 2019 event in June. We've also got a link to the DHS UAS page and that critical infrastructure video. And you can find how to download the latest drone incidents around the world map and also that report, Risk, Regulation, and Resilience in Countering Drones.
So I guess, Max, everybody else, if you want to find us other places, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook, facebook.com/UAV Digest. And of course, you can be on our Slack listener team. And all you need to do with that is just send us a humble email with, please send us a link so we can be on the show, sir. Please, please, can we have some more? But you can do that by sending it to feedback@theuavdigest, and Max and I will get on it to get you your link so you can join it. And that includes meetups, and it may not be with Max and I, but if we want our listeners to get together, have a good time, send us a story, send us a link, so that's important. And of course, Max and I will be together in mid-June at Innovations of Flight at the Udvar-Hazy Center, where we will be talking airplanes and drones. And we look forward to meeting everybody there. And we will be having our usual dinner on Saturday night that everyone's welcome to at the Red Robin. And with that, I'm going to say, we're about to get hit with another major thunderstorm, so I better get off the internet. This is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.